This talk was given by Jody Hojin Kimmel Sensei at Zen Mountain Monastery. Hojin Sensei is a resident teacher at the monastery and co-director of the Zen Center of New York City. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you'd like to make a donation or find out more about our retreats and residency programs, visit our website at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
It's said that the very last words that the Buddha said to his disciples who surrounded his deathbed was, "All conditioned things are impermanent. Work out your own salvation with diligence." And another translation of this final phrase is, "Things fall apart. Tread the path with care. Live a life of care." So when I read that, it felt like the Buddha gave the precepts in the very last moments of his death. Live a life of care. So the idea of care is a very important teaching the Buddha developed. Take good care, no time to waste. And of course, this still reverberates for us as practitioners today. And tonight, to look into this ceremony that we are now within as a beneficial action of taking good care. Buddha said, "Conditions are subject to decay. Work out your lifeline, your reclamation, with care." So with this ceremony, just as we just did, we renew our negative mind states, which is living a life of disciplined care for our most precious resource, our mind. We think that it just does what it does, but we actually have to take care of this precious resource. And if we cannot take care of this, then we'll continue to be an unsurmountable mess. Have you noticed? So the word care, as spoken by the Buddha in Pali, is apamada, apamada, which again is hard to translate. It's in English, so there's many words to get the feel of it. Alertness, attentiveness, awareness, care, carefulness, concentration, concern, conscientiousness, conviction, diligence, discernment, earnestness, heedfulness, mindfulness, non-laxity, perseverance, persistence, tirelessness, thoughtfulness, vigilance, watchfulness, zeal. Sometimes the negative is used, so it shows us what we need to actually work on, like non-discernment, non-heedfulness. Stephen Batchelor, in an article on the Buddha's last words, translated apamada as care because he thought it was a more embracing term than many of the other possibilities I just read. And it also refers to something that holds the whole thing together. So care, taking care, is what holds the whole thing together. He explains that apamada is not just the occasional mindful thought or attentive state of mind. It has to do with that primary ethical or moral orientation we have in life, with which we bring into being in whatever activity we're engaged in, whether in formal meditation, in our interactions with other people, in our social concerns, or in our political choices. It's the energetic cherishing of what we regard as good. And fusatsu is translated as continuous good practice. When we do fusatsu, it's entering into continuous good practice, taking care. And I think this, it's the energetic cherishing of what we regard as good. I think this is an appealing thing to think about in a time which we are seeing close up in our face in so many different places, the reality of the term things falling apart. It seems worthwhile to think about what might hold the whole thing together. And Buddha points to care, the energetic cherishing of what we regard as good. There was an occasion when King Prasenada asked Buddha, "Is there one thing which secures both kinds of good, the good pertaining to this world and that pertaining to what follows after death?" "Yes," Buddha replies, "there is such a thing, care. Just as the footprints of all living beings that walk fit into the footprint of an elephant, so that footprint of an elephant holds everything in their one footprint." He said, "So care is the one thing which secures both kinds of good." Buddha's answer, identifying the one outstanding virtue that encompasses all others. Elsewhere, he says, "All skillful states are rooted and converge in care, and care is considered the chief among them." This fusatsu, continuous good practice, or to cease from unwholesome action, that is, taking care of our precious resource, is where we can bear the truth, the continuous good practice of body, mouth, thought, or speech are the renewal itself. So we make visible a way to come into right, complete relationship with ourselves, our relations, and our world. To look deeply into what it is that causes us to separate and how easily we go back into the trance of separation. Traditionally, the monks and nuns or nuns of the Sangha met twice a month on the full moon or the new moon and confessed openly all their specific transgressions of the 227 Praksimokkha rules of the Vinaya, for women 311, that they broke over the past fortnight. Can you imagine? Each rule broken exacts a prescribed specific correction from the community. So everyone is caring for one another in this process. Yeah, to become more wholesome. This could be anything from simply apologizing to being kicked out. Sound familiar? Even here, now, with the Vinaya, with the Doshinji Code, we have ways of living in harmony. And for all of us to own up to all of our harmful actions of body, speech, and mind from the beginning of time. More broadly, to acknowledge our regret for harmful actions internally with the awakened quality of our mind. We often can feel the gravitational force for us to go into a dream state. And there is also a gravitational pull to bring consciousness back to suffering, back into suffering, because everything has to be dealt with. So it works both ways. We can feel ourselves go into suffering, into that dream state, into that separation, and then also consciousness wants to bring us back, because that's who we are, to come back to that wholeness. Everything has to be dealt with to realize and to be embodied. And if we are not willing to see what life is trying to show us, it will keep ramping up the intensity until we are willing to see what we need to see. We are in relationship with situations, people, interacting with friends and lovers, children, animals, and the rest. And what is required is the willingness to let our life impact us. In this way, our life itself is our greatest ally. That what impacts us is actually supporting us to see. Let ourselves see in that process if we go into judgment, to blame, into should and shouldn'ts, if we start to point the finger somewhere other than here. We can really come to grips with the fact that the only person who can cause us to suffer, who can cause us to misperceive, to separate, follow delusion, the only one with this much power is you, is me. Nothing in the external environment causes us to lose a sense of the wakeful state. Nobody we meet, no situation we deal with has the power to cause us to fall out of who we truly are. This is one of the most important realizations we can make. We hear from so many wise ones that say to us, this is an inside job. It is something we do to ourselves mistakenly, unknowingly, and often unconsciously. So we began the ceremony with offerings, flowers, candlelight, incense, bows, raising the mind in respect and reverence for life, while at the same time recognizing we don't always see and experience directly, though we may feel it. And then we come to our knees. We lower our whole embodiment to the earth, to our knees, place our palms together, and we invoke the Gatha of Atonement, which creates the space for the ceremony to happen. All evil karma committed by me since of old on account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance, born of my body, mouth, and thought, now I atone for it all. So we open the space to acknowledging the response ability we have to show our respect and reverence, perhaps finding a path to forgiveness. We will not have a different past. So how will we say yes to all that has happened? Yes, this happened. How do we meet it in the present? Atone if we have harmed. Practice good. Actualize this good for the whole world. Become one with who we are. Interestingly, I found that the Gath of Atonement comes from Samantabhadra Bodhisattva, whose name means universal virtue or universal goodness. So I like to think of Samantabhadra as being an all-around good person. So Samantabhadra represents wisdom in action, a symbol for practice. And you could see Samantabhadra in the Buddha hall riding an elephant. Some of them have six tusks for the six senses. Samantabhadra is known for writing 10 vows. It's at the end of the last chapter of the Avasamtaka Sutra, the Flower Garland Sutra. It's vow number 4, to atone or repent. And this is Samantabhadra's words for the vow and how it comes to us today. From beginningless time, I have acted unskillfully with craving, hatred, and ignorance in actions of body, speech, and mind. Determined now to begin anew, I atone. Actually, he uses repent in some translations. Maybe the reason we don't hear a lot about Samantabhadra is one of the features of Samantabhadra's practice is hidden good deeds, just like the chief disciple. But we do hear the name in the Meal Gatha, in Nenju, and in this ceremony. So Samantabhadra is around. All harmful karma. Karma is another word for conditioning, cause and effect, derived from the verbal root kur, which means to make or to do. And the main idea behind karma is the relationship between what we choose to do and what we thereby make of ourselves. How we shape ourselves and how we are shaped by ourselves through an action, through action, each moment by intention. And many things go into the tapestry of karma. We can say our family of origin, the life we have lived, the situations we have been brought into, our parents, culture, society, all have affected our bodies and minds with their views, morality, beliefs. All these things go into our conditioning, just like loading a program onto a computer. And we behave in certain ways, and we get to know it in others. And from this, we derive our sense of a separate self. And each of us has had breaks from that illusion. We feel and see its incredible weight. It seems unimaginable that we would go into it again and again, but we do. And when we find our way to practice, we keep blowing it out of our system, getting clear on the process of what is happening. And of course, we each have a different sort of karmic inheritance. No one's is greater or lesser. It is what it is. So we can ask ourselves good questions about how we unenlighten ourselves. What do we still hold on to? And then perhaps loosening our grip. This isn't about becoming a perfect being. And what would that look like anyway? It's kind of worrisome. It's amazing that that which is awake in us has no fear of that which is not awake. It doesn't have any fear because it doesn't perceive anything as separate or other than itself. This is what we know, actually. Everything is itself, equally itself. If we're honest, we may notice there's an inherent movement toward releasing any binding, any limitation, releasing ourselves from the dream. There's an inherent movement to do that. That's our wakefulness operating on its own. This desire, a good desire, to release from hate, ignorance, and greed, or any other sense of confinement. That's good. Forgiveness may be part of this. A vulnerable release. I think it has its own evolutionary quality. Perhaps a tender process with stages. And no one can intervene in the way my actions evolve me, not even a Buddha. Evolving, we enter karmic patterns, liberate feelings. It's sometimes hard to, or not to, put another human being in our heart. Sometimes it's hard to put them there, and sometimes it's hard not to put them there. To allow this to happen, we have to be willing to be honest with ourselves while not denying what we have seen, not wishing for a different past. And we also have to see how things are right here now. To inquire, we say this a lot, be curious. What things in me can still go into hate, greed, and ignorance? In just this action, we can sincerely become one with being human. The technique, the method, simple sincerity, taking good care. Buddha called care the ultimate dharmic virtue, when we need and really want what is true. We can't impose sincerity. Reality is sincere. We see how one moment we can be really wise and the next deluded. We can have a very deep sense of the nature of things while remaining conflicted and deluded in other areas of our lives. So to not shy away, to actually look, turn, face, sincerely, then perhaps we can truly vow to save the infinite multitude of sentient beings. To the extent we care for their mode of being unfolding and flourishing, and our own mode of being unfolding and flourishing, then we invoke the names of the Buddhas to be one with. Namu. Namu means to be one with. Be one with all those virtues as this very body and mind. Daida Roshi often used to ask, how do we become one with something? What does it mean? He said, every thought, every breath, every cell in your body unified. Being one with something is very similar to invoking something. To invoke means to call forth, to conjure, to put into effect, to bring about. To cause is to invoke. He cites Bodhidharma in his teaching. Buddha means awareness, the awareness of body and of the mind that prevents evil from arising in either. So we call constantly to mind the rules of discipline, the precepts, and to follow them with all our might. That's what's meant by invoking, being one with who we truly are. And then we can set a vow, a very live bundle of focused, committed energy and motion to see something through, no matter what the obstacles. Beings are numberless, I vow to save them. Desires inexhaustible, I vow to end them. Dharmas are boundless, I vow to master them. The Buddha way is unattainable, I vow. Vows speak to something larger and ask us to continually return over and over again to our deepest intention, and to be oriented in our life to what is most, most beneficial, which emerges from our own unique life and circumstances. And then we chant the three treasures. In a moment we will. Being one with the Buddha, with all sentient beings, raise the Bodhi mind with everyone. With all beings, let the supreme way be realized. Raise the Bodhi mind, the aspiration to awaken, to put the light on the ignorance. That's the enlightenment, to light up what was ignorant. Being one with the Dharma, with all sentient beings, penetrate all sutras. Let wisdom be like the ocean. Being one with the Sangha, with all sentient beings, lead the people. Let harmony pervade everywhere. And finally, we bring the whole thing to a conclusion by giving away the whole ceremony. May the merits of maintaining the precepts permeate the Dharma world. And may our sincere vows to accomplish the Buddha way be realized together. May the merits pervade the Dharma world, the whole universe of things, the merit of this ceremony. May it reach everywhere. It means to give it away. And it is in this giving, giving away ourselves, our life, giving our practice, that we unify with everything. There could be no finer vow. It's the vow of all the Buddhas and ancestors. And because of this vow, we're fortunate enough to have this incredible Buddha Dharma here now. Things are impermanent. Sincerely, take good care.
Thanks for listening. You can find more Dharma talks, interviews, and events at zmm.org/media. While online, please check out the Jizo Project, our multifaceted initiative to make Zen Mountain Monastery more accessible and welcoming to all. Learn about the new Jizo House building and accessibility enhancements to existing facilities that are just two aspects to this exciting endeavor. Find out more and see how you can get involved at zmm.org/JizoProject. That's JizoProject.